Live. Live. Hip, two, three, four. Hip, two, three, four. Lift. If. We're the team at EFR.
We're the team at EFR.
Make the most of what we are.
Make the most of what we are.
We love Yahweh, He's our King.
We love Yahweh, He's our King.
To His glory we now sing.
To His glory we now sing.
Hip, hip, two, three, four, hip. Hip, two, three, four, hip.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the One-to-One Radio Show. Guess who is your host? Come on, can you guess who? Yeah, it's me, David James. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue our series with Robert Edmondson. Excuse me, I always screw his name up. It's unbelievable. It's one of the hardest names to spit out. Robert Edward Edmondson's book, I Testify Against the Jews. This is a remarkable book. This man is a hero, an American hero. You've never heard of him unless you know what this series is about. And this is part 8. So as I read through this man's book and through his testimony, where this is how he's testifying against the Jews, he's confirming things that I've taught to you. He's confirming things that others have taught to you. He's confirming things. This man wrote this book before I was even alive. Probably you too. Okay? So we're at, I had gone to page 135. Of course, this doesn't line up the right way. So I had taught on that already and brought us to this next part on page 145. That's of the PDF. Now, the actual pages don't line up. You know how PDFs are. It starts off addenda. While engaged in the early part of the Patriotic Crusade in New York City, I met Reverend George Albert Simons. That doesn't sound good to me, does it to you? Referred to in an Overman Senate committee report. In his talks with me, this Methodist minister, Simons, hello? This Methodist minister more than confirmed his testimony about Jewish rule in Russia and said there was no doubt in his mind that it continued. He was subjected to persistent Jewish persecution on his return to the U.S. So it looks like he claims he's not a Jew. About this time, I also met Dr. J.E. Connor, formerly U.S. Consul at St. Petersburg during the Revolution. He told me he saw automobiles driven by Jews machine gunning crowds of people in the Russian capital. Did you just hear that? He told Robert Edward Edmondson that he saw automobiles driven by Jews machine gunning crowds of people in the Russian capital. Does that sound like the mafia to you? Huh? He reported to Washington, and he was soon thereafter removed from his post. After he reported that, you see. He told me that for years afterward, he was Jew-hounded out of every position he obtained. Finally impoverished, he died in a Brooklyn, New York YMCA room. Can you believe that? Ladies and gentlemen, these are the heroes that you never hear of. Can you imagine that all he did was tell Edward Edmondson this very thing? And I'm sure there must have been some other things. But he was soon removed from his job. And then he was hounded for years afterwards by Jews until he had to live in a one-room YMCA room. Can you believe that? Jewish capitalism backing communism. Now, this strikes me immediately. I started to look at this, and once I saw this, I said, ka-ching. You know what I mean? See, one of the little tricks in this world is you've got the Hegelian dialectic, which I talk about frequently. Only we don't always talk about this particular one. But you see, capitalism and communism are fierce enemies. Fierce. When communists would speak about America, they would call us dirty capitalists. And when America would speak about Russia, they would speak about vile communists. But in the process of capitalism backing communism or fighting communism, we now have what we have in America, which is democracy. In a sense, I know democracy actually leads to socialism, which leads to communism, but what it is this socialized democracy, let's call it communized democracy. But one thing you have to realize is what I've told you. See, there's two books. One's called The Naked Communist, and there's another book called The Naked Capitalist. Now, what you have to realize here is the capitalists and the communists are the same people. Just as the Orthodox Jews and the Zionists, or Jews fighting the Zionists, is the same deal. So, capitalism, who are the capitalists of our society? Well, who runs all the corporations? Jews, right? Who runs the Hollywood? Who runs Wall Street? Who runs the media? Who runs Amazon.com? Who runs Dell Computer? Who runs all these different companies? Can you tell me? Yeah. The Jews. They're the capitalists. But at the same time, they're the ones that promote communism. And capital, money, came from this country to back the communist revolution, which was called the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, where they went and they finally took revenge on the Tsar and his family. Remember, Russia was a Christian nation. And Jacob Schiff sent money from this country. So did Woodrow Wilson. Wohlson, Wohlson, was one of his renditions of his name before. So, capitalism has always backed communism. But in the public sphere, they appear to be fighting against one another, so you would never understand that they are both one and the same. Now, as I say this to you, this should begin to dawn on you about many, many things in our world. Another example, the prime example, would be democracy, where the Democrat Party appears to be fighting against the Conservative Party, but in reality, as I've said hundreds of times, there's not a dime's difference between them, just like capitalism and communism. There's really no difference between it. See, if you look at capitalism, communism was created. They created communism as the antithesis to Christianity. And capitalism is also somewhat of an antithesis to Christianity because you can't serve both Yahweh and Mammon. You understand? Mammon being capital. You see, communism could not survive without the capital from capitalism. If they had no capital, there would have been no communism. That revolution had to be supported. And so they created the Satanic Church out there in California as another opposite to Christianity. See, in communism, there is no God. And the people have no liberty. In Christianity, we have a Father in heaven, and he gives us liberty, when we obey him, that is. So, I'm just setting this premise so you'll understand that when you saw these things in movies, with the capitalists fighting the communists, there is no such war. It's a war in your head that they built for you to believe in. And there may be little evidences of it that they want you to see and is deliberately done to make you believe in this lie. But in reality, the capitalists are the communists. And this is where it starts off. Jewish capitalism backing communism. Edmondson Bulletin of January 25th, pay attention to the year, 1939. Since Jews have been historically notorious as capitalist exploiters, what evidence is there to support the charge that Jews and communism are allies, and that international Jewish finance is backing communism, Bolshevism, socialism, the international trinity that is today trying to destroy nationalism, is a question skeptics frequently look into. Below are documentary references, including confessions from Jewish authorities, indicating that Jewish leadership is using international communism, Bolshevism, socialism as a tool, the Trinity it's called, okay? So remember that this is a Trinity. And this is an opposite Trinity than the one you would think that is the Holy Trinity. It could very well be that communism, Bolshevism, and socialism could be the three frogs that come out of the devil's mouth in Revelation. I don't know. There's so many things that could be those three things. I've often thought even the Washington, D.C., the city of London within the city of London, and the Vatican would be three frogs right there. So, it says here, again, below are documentary references, including confessions from Jewish authorities, indicating that Jewish leadership is using international communism, Bolshevism, socialism as a tool or weapon to exploit and break down non-Jewish nations, Israelite nations, politics, economics, culture, and national patriotism. The chief enemy of Jewish internationalism. So, Judeo-Christian, tell me, how can everything these Jews do is against us Israelites, us non-Jews? How can you be supporting these people when they're out to get you, out to kill you, out to destroy your culture, out to destroy Yahweh, everything? I mean, I just don't understand you, how you can't see this. The Jew evolved organized capitalism and its working instrumentality. The banking system said, okay, so the Jew evolved organized capitalism and its working instrumentality, the banking system, said the American Hebrew of September 10th, 1920. The Jew Karl Marx is the father of communism. In the American Mercury for April 1935, Jewish anarchists Emma Goldman declared that the Soviet Jewish established as Soviet had become the crassest form of state capitalism. Who's who in American Jewry and Jewish roles of honor, quote unquote, placed the capitalist Jews Baruch, Morgenthau, Brandeis, and Lehman beside communist Jew leaders Trotsky, Levinoff, Olgin, Bloom, et al. In his book, The Truth About the Slump, author A.N. Field points out the enormously significant timing thing today is that the Jewish power of the purse and revolutionary activities are working in a common direction, and there is a massive evidence that they are working in unison. When we sink, we become a revolutionary proletariat, communistic. When we rise, there arises also the terrible power of the purse, capitalistic. Theodore Herzl in The Jewish State. Did you hear that? See, did you wonder when I told you that they're both the same? That they, the Jews are the capitalists and the Jews are the communists? Did you believe me? I mean, I even named names for you, and not the names, but I named the ideas that who's running all the businesses in America. And of course, we know that the Bolshevik Revolution was primarily communist Jews and was funded by Jews in America. And yes, I named some names. So, when we sink, we become a revolutionary proletariat, communistic. When we rise, there arises also the terrible power of the purse, capitalistic. Theodore Herzl, right? I just wanted to read it again from his book, The Jewish State. In his booklet, The Jewish Assault on Christianity, Reverend Dr. G.B. Winrod of Wichita, Kansas says, it's impossible to separate Jewish capitalism from Jewish communism. I'd like to perhaps see if I could find this book, The Jewish Assault, if you'll be so patient with me. The Jewish Assault on Christianity. Let's see if I can drum it up. Come here, dear. All right, The Jewish Assault on Christianity. Okay. Pardon me. Okay, I just didn't want to forget that. And pardon me for that. Oh, good. I believe we can come up with it right here. Okay, maybe you should do the same thing. The Jewish assault on Christianity. And it came up from... Yes, I've got it. Oh, it's only 21 pages. Okay, download that, ladies and gentlemen. We'll get to it sometime. All right. Okay. Yes, the Jewish assault on Christianity. So let's get right back into this. Thank you for your patience, doctors and nurses. You beautiful nurses, you. So, in his booklet, he said it is impossible to separate Jewish capitalism from Jewish communism, and he's absolutely correct. The London Catholic Herald of October 21st, 28th, and November 4th, 1933, published, astute Jew financiers would not be so stupid as to put vast amounts of capital into the worldwide activities of Bolshevism, communism, unless they were certain in their own minds that their own interests and power were secure. The New York Slime fake news outlet of June 28, 1934 said, "The underlying philosophy of the New Deal is the philosophy of Justice Brandeis of the U.S. Supreme Court. The NRA is almost a composite of his dissenting opinions." The Arkansas Gazette of May 30th, 1927 printed this evidence. A check for $100 we received recently as a contribution by Commonwealth College of Mena, Arkansas, from Louis D. Brandeis, Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. That colleague was investigated as communistic by the Arkansas legislature. You see? Lewis, the name Lewis, I find that very interesting. Okay, the New York Jewish Day of May 11th, 1937 said, this is another publication, the Jewish Day. "The rabbinical assembly favors the general tendency of the recently adopted social legislation, and in particular, the TVA. Socialist Norman Thomas said the TVA was typically socialist." And from the Chicago Jewish Sentinel of September 22nd, 1938, admits that the film industry absorbs its share and more of Jewish refugees expelled as communists from Germany. Listen again. The film industry absorbs its share and more of Jewish refugees expelled as communists from Germany. That's from 1937. I hope you're listening, because this is not boring in any way. This is absolutely amazing. Colonel Edmondson put back into Jewish Publicity, Bulletin of February 21st, 1939. Father Charles E. Coughlin should be prosecuted because in violation of the Bill of Rights and Constitution for the U.S., he persists in libeling the Jewish religion. He is amenable to both ecclesiastic law of the Catholic Church, and also the law of our country. If these battles should be initiated by our government, it may also have the salutary effect of forever silencing such enemies who promote the destruction of American democracy as Colonel Robert Edward Edmondson of New York. The above is from an article by Julius Hochfelder, LLM, PhD. So what he's saying is what they're doing today. You see, Father Coughlin should be silenced. He should be prosecuted for saying things against Jewish people. And they're saying that he's saying it, doing this libel against the Jewish religion, just in the same way as LaGuardia, as we found out in this book, was saying that against Robert Edward Edmondson. And I see article after article after article today talking about how people like this are destroying the democracy. And they're very worried that the democracy will get destroyed. They had no care whatsoever that the republic was overridden by the democracy. But they're worried that people like myself, people like Edmondson, people like Coughlin, people like all the people you know that are speaking against these Jews, including the Jews, are worried that we're going to destroy their democracy. You see, their democracy is their beloved democracy. It's their favorite form of government, as I keep saying over and over and over again. You must understand that these people want to destroy us with this democracy. They must have this. I mentioned this, and I'll mention it again now that it comes to my mind. When I watched the it was the show on the mafia. It was a long show, and near the end of this show, I'm trying to think, documentary, that's the word I'm thinking of, this documentary about the mafia. The Italians said that without democracy, the mafia could not have existed in America. I want you to think about that. I want you to think about that because democracy is your enemy. I know it's been told to you that it was your friend, but democracy is what these Jews have been spreading throughout the world and putting their... You understand that the control mechanism is the central bank, right? Just as we were reading this book this very day, it talked about the capitalists and their purse. You see, democracy needs the dough behind it, just like if you say democracy, you might as well just say communism. It's communism with capitalism infused into it. Because capitalism is necessary in the control with democracy. Got to have lots of dough, lots of money. And the central bank provides that. Just think that, you know, doesn't it ever dawn on you people out there that they put it in law that the Federal Reserve could not be audited? Don't you find that to be absolutely foolish to allow somebody to put something like that into law? In other words, they can just create money and there's no accountability. They don't have to account for any of it. They can give it to who they want. They can take it from who they want, etc., etc. This is how all the businesses were stolen from the white man. This is how all the properties and all these different things have been stolen from the white man. When you have the power, give me control over a nation's currency and I care not who makes its laws. Give me control over a nation's currency and I care not who makes its laws. Give me control over a nation's currency. Well, the central bank is control over a nation's currency. It's a control over our currency and I care not who makes its laws because I can control those who makes its laws with the currency. I can control what people can say. I can control free speech with the currency. I can control setting the young people to war with the currency. I can brainwash the public with the currency. I can steal every business and every newspaper and every media outlet with the currency. Understand? I mean, you should understand. I know there's lots of people that do understand what I'm talking about. I'll say it again. Give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. In other words, the government is of no worry to anybody that can create the currency because they can control everything in that nation. That's what democracy is. And that's what communism is. When you understand these things, you'll understand why democracy is the enemy of the American people. And I'm tired of seeing people out there saying, they're destroying our beloved democracy. How ignorant can you possibly be? How stupid can you possibly be to say such a statement? Democracy is destroying the world. Democracy is the enemy of the world as the Jew is the enemy of the world, and democracy is his tool with the currency against the people. I told you, democracy instantly divides the people against one another. You pick one of the parties and you fight against the other party. How can that end up in a good thing? How can that end up in any good thing? How is it working out today? Is the left mentally ill, more mentally ill than they've ever been, and starting to really show their cards at this point? But it doesn't matter. Never fear, the right is the same as the left. They're a little more conservative, that's all. Oh, yes. So the above was from when they said these things. They were worried about them losing the democracy. And they're very worried about it today. They're worried about you finding out about the democracy and finding out that it's not your beloved democracy. Democracy is for anybody but white people. These are things that were discovered through my shows, through reading Saul Alinsky's book. Okay, before, the above is from an article by Julius Hochfelder, LLM, PhD, page 4 of the California Jewish Voice, February 3rd, 1939. Hochfelder is identified thus in a 1938-1939 Who's Who in American Jewry on page 446. Julius Hochfelder, LLM, PhD, member of Bar Association of New York, born Hungary, 1880. Before exposing this foreign-born Jew's lawyer's misrepresentation of American constitutional philosophy and law, may the undersigned native-born American veteran journalist first inject a personal note. By his article, I welcome my return to the columns of the newspapers. The conspiracy of silence in this respect has become deafening. Since the American Hebrew some time ago announced that nevermore would a certain number one anti-Jew be mentioned. Now I am grateful to Hungarian Hochfelder for having restored me to disfavor, and it is with patriotic ardor that I redouble efforts, especially since he has promoted me to the rank of colonel. Maybe increased loyalty to duty will bring a Jewish generalship, or perchance a medal, since Jews are hell on medals. But let's look at the record and get down to business. Hochfelder says, I'm destroying American democracy, quote unquote, by exposing Jewish anti-Americanism. Now, what is this democracy, quote unquote? The word doesn't appear in the Constitution of the U.S., and that historic document takes pains by Section 4, Article 4, to guarantee to every sovereign state of the American Union a republican form of government. Do you understand this now? So you have an American country that has it written in its constitution that it will always be. It's a guarantee that it will always be a Republican form of government. And then you let Jews in your country. And what happens when Jews come into your country? What happens? They begin to start to steal your money. They begin to kill your children and drink their blood. They begin to call the citizens names and exploit the citizens of that nation. They begin to go against Christianity and against their God. They begin to encroach upon the government and using money power. And they begin to change laws in the nation. Laws into Talmudic laws rather than laws of Yahweh. Laws that are against the citizenry of the nation. Laws that the citizens in the nation never authorized and never would have authorized. And then they begin to persecute and persecute and persecute, while all the while they portray themselves, these Jews, as victims. When they're causing other people harm, stealing property, stealing businesses, stealing money, general nastiness, sexual deviance, and on and on and on, destroying the moral fiber of the nation. Vampires drinking blood. And then they get the police and the military to go after the citizens and the courts. Hochfelder said, I am destroying American democracy. And so he says, now what is this democracy? The word doesn't appear in the Constitution of the U.S. I read this for you, but I'm just reading it again. And that historic document, the Constitution, takes pains by Section 4, Article 4, to guarantee to every sovereign state of the American Union a republican form of government. It is worthy of note that the Central Conference of the American Rabbis, New York Times, September 13, 1936, challenged the American Christian social system and demanded in substitution thereof a thoroughly socialized democracy. These Jews challenged the American Christian social system, and these Jews demanded, in substitution of this Christian social system, that we should have a thoroughly socialized democracy. Number one, I'm very tired of hearing Jews demanding anything. You know what I'd tell them is pound sand. Get out of my country. That's what I demand. Number two, who are they to demand anything in this nation? They're aliens. You don't just step on the American shore and you become instantly an American. Who gave you that stupid idea? And why did you believe it? That's a nice question. So, they demanded a thoroughly socialized democracy. Which social democracy, quote-unquote, is described in Webster's dictionary as the Communist Party in Russia? Social democracy, listen again, is described in Webster's dictionary as the Communist Party in Russia. Again, social democracy is described in Webster's dictionary as the Communist Party in Russia. Saul Alinsky said that the Democratic Party, I keep repeating this lately because I want you to all know it and hear it and hear it and hear it until it's in your brain. He said that there's no need for a Communist Party in America because the Democrat Party fills all that perfectly. The Social Democratic Party. You understand? Did you notice that there are now Social Democrats coming out now? Into the Democratic Party? You did know that, didn't you? If such Jewmocracy is what Holchfelder means by democracy, he can bet his last shekel that I'm out to destroy it in the USA. No group libel law. So much for the philosophy of the American government. Now, as to American law, there is no law in the U.S. prohibiting the publishing of a libel of any religion or group. The Constitution of the Republic and every sovereign state within it substantially provides that no law shall be made respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. The Constitution of New York State properly adds, the liberty of conscience hereby secured shall not be so construed as to justify practices inconsistent with the peace and safety of the state. In dismissing May 10th, 1938, the charge of libel of all persons of the Jewish religion, in the Edmondson LaGuardia case, Judge Wallace of New York said in part, after the consideration of briefs submitted by the people, the defendant and amicus curiae, the court, on its own motion and in furtherance of justice, dismisses the indictment which charges the defendant with libeling all persons of the Jewish religion. In a letter to the New York Herald Tribune, published August 29, 1936, Lewis Waldman, New York lawyer, wrote as follows, quote, the remedy sought by Mayor LaGuardia to be invoked against them, them who is them, disseminators of anti-Semitic propaganda. And of course, I say there's no such word as anti-Semitic. Well, there is. It means anti-white. Jews are not Semitic. So just change it to anti-Jew. Propaganda is socially dangerous and legally unsound. Here we have Hungarian Hochfelder on one side of the fence and another foreign-born socialist Jew, Russian Waldman, on the other. Both sides, as usual, promoting confusion, the divide-and-rule policy of international Jewry. Divide-and-rule policy of international Jewry. Common democracy is divide and rule, is it not? Huh? Isn't it? Divide and rule? However, the undersigned thanks Hungarian Hochfelder for affording the opportunity of using his legal masterpiece as a sounding board for more exposure publicity and cordially invites him to come again. Unmasking Congressman Sabbath, February 23rd, 1939, broadcast. An open defense letter, February 28th, 1939. To Congressman Adolph J. Sabbath of Illinois, Chairman of the House Rules Committee, Washington, D.C. Sir, on February 13th, 1939, replying to a letter of February 6 from Walter Steele, general manager of the National Republic magazine, in which he protested his branding as an anti-Jew promoter of Congressman Mark Antonio. He was branded. I want you to pay attention now because this is, I can already tell you are. Congressman Mark Antonio, that's his name, M-A-R-C-A-N-T-O-N-I-O. How much do you want to make a bet that Congressman Mark Antonio is a Sicilian with Jew blood running through his veins. How much do you want to make a bet? He was, so this man, Walter Steele, of he the general manager of the National Republic magazine, had protested his branding as an anti-Jew, anti-Semitic promoter of Congressman Marcantonio. You included the following provocative paragraph wherein you extended yourself under the immunity of the floor, as printed on page 2238 of the Congressional Record of February 17, 1939, thereby making a public document. So he was dubbed anti-Jewish by Congressman Marcantonio. Why would Marcantonio care about anyone who is being anti-Jewish? That's the first question I'd ask you. Second question is, do you think Marcantonio is a Sicilian? Or do you think he just has, like Nancy Pelosi, that he just has this, and Cuomo, that they just have this natural love for the Jews? This, well, I wouldn't even say it's natural, it's unnatural. It's unnaturally magnetized. A Jew didn't come out and call him anti-Semitic. The congressman who was an Italian, as Archie would say. So that ought to tell you a little something right there. Colonel E.N. Sanctuary, Eastern representative of Colonel H.A. Young of American Vigilant Intelligence Federation of Chicago, is an associate of the most vicious and criminal anti-Jews in America, such men as Robert Edward Edmondson and James True. And behind all these is the high priestess of the Nazi movement in America, Mrs. Elizabeth Dilling. Remember, I've read from these people's books. I've never heard of James True. We'll have to look into him. Let me write that down while I'm here, and we'll see what we can come up with that. I'm not going to go looking right now because I've already done it to you once. James True. We'll see what we can find out. So, you see there... The Jews in their press have demonized Robert Edward Edmondson, James True, and Mrs. Elizabeth Dilling. Remember I read many shows, I read her book, which taught us all about what's really in the Talmud. The assembled facts, you see, anyone who goes against the Jews is libeled. You see, they're able to libel these people with the term anti-Semite, which is a false term. They're able to label these people and libel. Label and libel them. But when they do it to them, they're trying to claim that they're libeling every Jew in the whole Jewish religion, which there is no Jewish religion. Unless you want to call it Satanism, because that's what it is. So, the assembled facts show that you, Steele, are indeed, as Congressman Marcantonio charged, closely identified with the most dangerous, undemocratic, un-American, and subversive groups in the U.S. See, undemocratic, not unrepublic. See, they're pro-republic, but they're undemocratic. I'm undemocratic myself. Yes, I admitted to it right now. I'm undemocratic. I'm against democracy because I know what it is. I know what it's doing to our world. It's not my beloved democracy. It's the Jews' beloved democracy. I note that Who's Who in American Jewry reports you as having been born in Czechoslovakia. He's speaking to this feller, that they libeled. You know, his name is Walter Steele. In the February 12, 1939 issue of the Constitutional Protective League of Illinois included 2405 Board of Trade Building, Chicago, I find the following quotation from September 1936 report of the Illinois National Defense Council, Adolph Sabath. In Congress, 30 years has never voted for national defense movements within our program. We have repeatedly found that plans for national defense are not safe in his hands. Why is that? Why wouldn't plans for national defense be safe in a Jew's hands? Well, you know about Feinstein, right? And you know about Sandy Berger. And you know about Bill Clinton. And you know about so many people. Jews. Yes, Bill Clinton is a Jew. He's not a white man. He's mixed with a white man, but he's not a white man. He's a Jew. Just like his wife is. Why? Because they're dual citizens. That's why. You can't have two masters. You will love one and hate the other, as Yeshua has told us. And all these Jews will all tell you that Jews come first. Israel comes first. Anybody who says such things shouldn't be in an American government and shouldn't be making decisions for American people. You understand that? Congressman Marcantonio is reported as heading the International Labor Defense, which is described thus in Miss Dilling's Red Network. I have that book, too. We'll get into that one. The American section of the controlled communist international Red Aid. Red Aid, Red Network, Esau, the tares are red. The Red Shield, the Red Cross, legally aids, the Red Cross. Now, I've said this before, but maybe you never heard it. The Red Cross is the way the Jews can control the blood. They need the blood. They want the blood. And they'll keep on changing their blood because they drink the blood. So Congressman Marcantonio, he heads the International Labor Defense. Do you understand why he might be a little pro-Jewish? He sounds like he's an internationalist, isn't he? The American section of the controlled communist international Red Aid legally aids and propagandizes in behalf of the communist criminals arrested for revolutionary activities, cooperating with American Civil Liberties Union. The American Civil Liberties Union is known as a communist organization. There is nothing about the liberties are not for Americans. Therefore, these communists. Still today, it's a communist organization. Frankfurter Ernst Hayes, Jewish organization, champion of communizers. Marcantonio is not listed as a Jew, although his activities are pro-Jewish, but for the present, we may classify him according to the formula now proclaimed in New York's Viz, New Dealers are circumcised Democrats. But you see, what you may not have known, Mr. Edmondson, is that he is a Jew under the guise of the Sicilian Italian. See, his unnatural propensity to be pro-Jewish is because Jewish blood runs through his bloodline. You understand? Just like Negro blood does. But what is there vicious about my stuff? Is it because the publications are documentary reproductions of what the Jews say about themselves and how they are propaganda, blinding, confused, dividing, and politically ruling gullible non-Jews? In that respect, I concede that the term is vicious, and I foresee a dreadful reckoning. What is there criminal about my publications? In dismissing May 10th, 1938, the Jewish Minority Grand Jury indictment against me in Jewish LaGuardia's New York City charging libel of all persons of the Jewish religion, quote-unquote, because I exposed Jewish communizing activities, the court said the dismissal was in the furtherance of justice. Where is the criminality? Did you deliberately lie? As usual, the Jewish prosecution hid behind the complaint title, The People of the State of New York versus Robert Edward Edmondson. But it was smoked out. See, they're calling themselves the People of New York, like as if they are Americans when they're aliens. Defendant Edmondson subpoenaed Princes of Jewry, quote-unquote, Bernard Baruch, Felix Frankfurter, Henry Morgenthau, Rabbi Wise, Samuel Untermyer, Mayor LaGuardia, James P. Warburg, Walter Lippmann, Justice Samuel I. Rosenman, whereupon your American Jewish Committee and the American Jewish Congress petitioned the court not to try the case because the indictment violated the free speech guarantee of the Constitution. You see, when it came down to it, these Jews wouldn't show up in court because they knew that this man had them by the culonis. And this is what's amazing about it. They backed off. He made all those people. Now, Bernard Baruch was said to be the president when FDR wasn't in town. He made the president back down. You tell me this ain't a real man? Are you Jews afraid to face facts? Yes, they are. The reason why they get emotional and say that you've hurt their feelings when you try to discuss facts is because they know they can't win the argument. They can't face the facts because the truth is a weapon against the lie. And the truth will cut the lie and dissect it and destroy it. You certainly could not have feared an humble individual patriot like myself, with one lone lawyer and a few Jew-deflated dollars for defense against 1,000 Jewish lights backed by billions. No, Mr. Congressman, Jews are afraid of the truth. They know that a few grains of it, plus a little courage, will blow the lid off when publicized. Well, I'm having a little problem here, ladies and gentlemen. I think what we'll do is we'll take a break. It's about that time right now, and we'll come back.
Today, calling, calling on Yahweh's holy army, and I'm calling, calling on them to pray. Standing, standing on Yahweh's holy mountain, and we're watchmen, watchmen on the wall today. Calling, calling on Yahweh's holy soldiers, and I'm calling, calling on them today. Get off the fence now. You've got to again today. Calling, calling on Yahweh's holy amen. Calling, calling for them to pray. Standing, standing on Yahweh's holy mountain. Watchmen, watchmen on the wall today. Calling, calling on Yahweh's holy soldiers. Calling, calling on them today. You know the time is right now. Right now, right away. Yes, I know it. Put on all your armor, soldier, and don't you be afraid. Speak your mind today. I pray, never give a place to evil and don't you go astray.
Welcome back to the One to One Radio Show, and it's me. Yes, it's David James. I'm telling you, this is an amazing book. And when you read between the lines, it just gets deep, baby. And I mean real deep. So we were talking about the fact that these Jews are afraid of the truth. They know that a few grains of it, plus a little courage, will blow the lid off when publicized. You have emphasized undemocratic groups, quote-unquote, in connection with your denunciation of the undersigned. As a citizen of the Republic, not a democracy, I plead guilty to that charge. Since a democracy, particularly the social democracy demanded by your Central Conference of American Rabbis, is communistic. You can count on me as being against such democracy to the last ditch. You Jews call me professional patriot, quote unquote. Well, I'd rather be that than a professional Jew, quote unquote. Or a professional politician. I couldn't have said it any better, Mr. Edmondson. Both of whom contribute destruction to the non-Jewish state, whereas a professional patriot, quote-unquote, contributes something constructive to the country that shelters him. However that may be, Mr. Congressman, my patriotic nest, quote-unquote, is almost bare as Mother Hubbard's cupboard. But I'll bet your coffers are full, quote-unquote, of America's hospitable bounty. Listen to this. South Africa warns Jews. extracts from a speech delivered by Eric H. Lou, L-O-U-W, February 24th, 1939, in the South African House of Assembly on the Alien and Immigration Bill, quote-unquote, are reproduced below. I am convinced that if it were possible to remove Jewish influence and pressure from the press and news agencies, the international outlook would be considerably brighter. In introducing this bill, I am actuated neither by fascism nor racialism. I have acted solely as a South African. The main principle of this bill is that it admits the existence in South Africa of the Jewish problem. It is perhaps appropriate that communism should be dealt with in a bill which also deals with the Jewish question, because communism, since its earliest days, has been linked with Jewry. Communism is international. Now listen, all these things I've told you, all these things I've been telling you, here is another testimony. I mean, it just goes on and on. Communism is international, and a Jew is international in his outlook. That's why he hates patriots. That's why he hates nationalism. That's why he hates Hitler. That's why he hates the Third Reich. That's why he hates the white nations. You understand? Communism had its birth in the teachings of Karl Marx, a Jew. I remember the Soviet delegation to the League of Nations included 7 Jews and 1 Russian. We find that in most countries where communism has taken root, the leaders of communism are Jews. The communist makes no distinction whatever on political, social, or economic grounds between the black and white races, which is particularly important for us in South Africa. Why is the principle of discrimination introduced into my bill? Because in the first place, the Jew is not assimilable. That he is not assimilable has been shown by the records of history, and it is also admitted by himself. Even in America, the so-called melting pot of the world, Jews have remained a separate nation. Ludwig Lewison, a well-known Jewish writer, says, assimilation is impossible because the Jew cannot change his national character. I find in a book of Jewish thoughts by Dr. J. H. Hertz this statement. What I understand by assimilation is loss of identity. It is the kind of assimilation I dread most, even more than pogroms. Basil M. Henriques, a distinguished Jew, in London, reported to the Zionist Record of South Africa, January 29th, 1939, saying, "There must be no assimilation. We are a peculiar people, and a peculiar people we must remain." Ludwig Lewison also says, "We are a people. We are a nationality." And he's a liar. Another Jewish factor which causes friction is Jewish control of finance and business, and the formation of monopolies, the domination of the professions. This is particularly so with regard to high finance and international banking. The international banker controls credit, and through it he controls industry and trade. In Johannesburg, 65% of the attorney firms are Jewish. Again, in Johannesburg, 65% of the attorney firms are Jewish. In Cape Town, attorneys are 41% Jewish. As regards to medical practitioners in Johannesburg, 48 are Jews, 48%. And in Cape Town, 31%. May I commend, sir, to this house and also to the members who are Jews and to Jews outside this house, the words of a man who is a friend of the Jews, author Hilaire Belloc, who says, "There is a Jewish problem, and the Jews who resent the statement of the problem and an attempt of solving it are not doing their own people any good. And they are, at the same time, denying us the right to put our own house in order, which is, of course, intolerable. That was from South Africa. That ought to be read on the Voki show. American Masquerades, March 7, 1939, Edmondson Bulletin. Under the smear title, Fascism in America, the March 6, 1939 issue of the weekly magazine Life, published in the ghetto of the nation, lists in parts as below anti-communist U.S. agencies as American masqueraders. In a pro-Jewish article covering 8 full pages designed to belittle a recent Madison Square Garden huge anti-Jew mass meeting. American Nationalist Confederation, League for Constitutional Government of New York, the Revealer of Wichita, Kansas, the American Guard, Reverend Charles E. Coughlin of Royal Oak, Michigan, Dr. G.B. Winrod of Kansas, George W. Christians of Chattanooga, Tennessee, James True of Washington, D.C., Robert Edward Edmondson of New York, and General George Van Horn Moseley and Senator Robert R. Reynolds. Of General Moseley, Life says, he made a bitter anti-New Deal outburst on his requirement last year. So you are anti-Jewish if you are against the New Deal. See what I'm saying? This is nothing new. You understand that this is exactly what it is today? In other words, if you were against Obama, you hate black people. If you are against anything the Jews are doing, saying, thinking, anything they do, you're an anti-Jew. Of General Mosey, yeah, okay, so they said that he made that, the New Deal is Jewish communist. That 22,000 attendance of anti-Jews at Madison Square Garden recently, plus many Red Jew violence incidents in New York City before and after, that are omitted from the newspaper, Jews papers, he calls them, proves that the big town has become Jew-conscious. Life, quote-unquote, is in the same classification as Tycoon Magazine. Fortune is managed by the Larson Loose crowd of Time and carries the following fine old American names as staff members on page 90, March 6, 1939. Joseph Kastner, A. Heskel, R. Rubel, B. Schreif, Rachel Albertson, David Court, Bernard Hoffman, and Albert Eisenstadt. To any open, intelligent mind, Life exposes its hand as well as its ignorance of the communist fascist matter at the beginning by diversively declaring, there is one profound difference which makes fascism a far greater menace to America than communism. Communism is a frank proposition to change America's whole way of life, but fascism begins to call on fearful men to unite against clutching enemies. Compare the foregoing sophistry with the following bullseye from communist Mark Sullivan. Oh, we have an Irish communist, as published in the New York Herald Tribune, 9/20/38. In any country where communism goes far enough, the next development is sure. The fascist principle rise to neutralize communism. If America resists communism, it need not fear fascism. In addition to that, Life quotes as high authority for its production the notorious Reverend L. M. Burkhead, Kansas City churchman, who takes expensive trips abroad and at home smelling out Jew expose agencies which are putting revolutionary internationalists on the spot. Reputation destroyer Life seeks to arouse class hatred against the patriotic agencies it blacklists. What does that sound like to you? So Life magazine was being used against the Patriots of America and was being used to promote communism. What is that telling you? And it was destroying reputations of people and causing class hatred. By using methods outlined by the Jewish Institution for Propaganda Analysis, notably saying each agency derives its inspiration and guidance, if not its pay, from a foreign government. So far as I personally am concerned, life lies on most of the counts listed. I believe the other patriots mentioned would sign that refutation. When life Jews say in one breath that they have bankrupted Germany by their international boycott on it for expelling Jew communists, and in the next proclaim that Hitler is financing all fascists, anyone with a grain of common sense will explode with hilarity. Facts of records are few about these agencies, remarks Life. My own journalistic record is known to more than 10 million people in the USA and elsewhere. We American patriots would like nothing better than to stand up before the Dies Committee and turn our pockets inside out. Dickstein twice backed down after summoning me before his Nazi Exposure Committee. One last word to Life. Thanks for the publicity. Any kind is better than none. We patriots can't yet strike off the chains from the press, but coming events are casting their shadows before. Controllers of the press won't let the public know the other side. That is suppression. We patriots are going to force you to publicize us. We know how to goad you into committing overt acts, and we're going to do it. Thanks particularly for lining us up with General Mosley and Senator Reynolds. We're glad you put us in the proper class. Look imitates Life, another magazine. Look of 228-39 imitates Life and says, Robert Edward Edmondson aspires to be America's Goebbels. He has no organization but busies himself distributing fascist propaganda. No, Edmondson aspires to nothing but the salvation of the Republic. But he admits that, as dictator of a properly financed Atlas National, which daily newspaper he could, with such power publicity, liberate forces which would affect emancipation within 6 months. Mark Twain's Indictment of the Jews. The following was a broadcast in the U.S. by Edmondson Bulletin of January 3rd, 1939. Folks, you see what we're seeing here? You see how long ago this was? It's much worse than it was then, and people still don't have any idea. Mark Twain, the famous author Samuel Clemens in private life, it has been alleged by Jews was pro-Jewish. However, that may be, his daughter married a Jew. The Russian-born pianist Osip Gavrilovich Salomonovich. Occasionally, the humorist wrote in a jocular way about the Jews, but in March 1898, issue of Harper's Magazine under the heading Concerning the Jews, he compiled a devastating analysis of Jew activities, which article was reproduced in the volume entitled The Man That Corrupted Hadleyburg and Other Stories by Mark Twain, 1900 copyright. We may have to look that one up too. The last edition of his book was issued in 1928, copyrighted by Mrs. Gabrilowitz, a Jewess, and the articles concerning the Jews was deleted from the article published in Harper's Magazine in 1898. The following extracts are taken in review. Can fanaticism alone account for this Jewish persecution? Quote, you know, that's a question. Is it now my conviction that it is responsible for hardly any of it? In this connection, I call to mind Genesis chapter... let me do the math here. 47. We have all read the story of the years of plenty and the years of famine in Egypt, and how Joseph, with that opportunity, made a corner in broken hearts and the crusts of the poor and human liberty. A corner whereby he took the nation's money all away to the last penny, took a nation's livestock all away to the last hoof, took a nation's land away to the last acre, then took the nation itself, buying it for bread, man by man, woman by woman, child by child, till all were slaves. A corner in which took everything, left nothing. A corner so stupendous that, by comparison with it, the most gigantic corners in subsequent history are but baby things. For it has dealt with hundreds of millions of bushels, and its profits were reckoned by hundreds of millions of dollars. And it was a disaster so crushing that its effects have not wholly disappeared from Egypt today, more than 3,000 years after the event. Now that's a slanted view of what took place, and it's not true whatsoever. Joseph saved the people of Egypt and his own and the tribes of Israel by storing away corn. This is something that it seems wacky to me. It's a wacky view. And so what they're trying to tell you is Joseph is a Jew. Oh, my goodness. There's no Jews in the tribe of Israel, ladies and gentlemen. Sooner or later, you're going to realize that. Well, in the U.S. cotton states after the war, the Jew came down in force, carpetbaggers, set up shop on the plantation, supplied all the Negroes' wants on credit, and at the end of the season was proprietor of the Negroes' share of the present crop and part of the next one. Before long, the whites detested the Jew. Now, this is the same old crap. You see, they thought that the white people were the slave owners and doing these dirty things to these slaves. But just like the Jewish boxers and musicians and the black boxers, actors, musicians, if you call them musicians, whatever they are, the shite talkers, they have no musical talent whatsoever. And all these other people, it's the same thing as it said right here. Listen again. In the U.S. cotton states after the war, the Jew came down in force, carpetbaggers, set up shop on the plantation, supplied all the Negroes' wants on credit. At the end of the season, was proprietor of the Negroes' share of the present crop and part of the next one. Before long, the whites detested the Jew. In other words, the Negroes were victims of the Jews, and Whitey got the blame for it as usual. The Jew is being legislated out of Russia. The reason is not concealed. The moment was instituted because Christian peasants stood no chance against his commercial abilities. The Jew was always ready to lend on a crop. When the settlement day came, he owned the crop. The next year, he owned the farm. He's trying to say like Joseph. In the England of John's time, everybody got into debt to the Jew. He gathered all the lucrative enterprises into his hands. He was the king of commerce. He had to be banished from the realm. For like reasons, Spain had to banish him 400 years ago. In Australia, about a couple of centuries later. In all ages, Christian Europe has been obliged to curtail his activities. If he entered upon a trade, the Christian had to retire from it. If he set up as a doctor, he took the business. If he exploited agriculture and other farmers had to get, the other farmers had to get something else. Exploited agriculture. He wasn't a farmer, you understand. See, they exploit agriculture today, but they're not the farmers. Still, almost bereft of employments, he found ways to make money, even to get rich. This history has a most sordid and practical commercial look. Religious prejudices may account for one part of it, but not for the other nine. Protestants have persecuted Catholics, but they did not take their livelihoods away from them. Catholics have persecuted Protestants, but they never closed agriculture and the handicrafts against them. I feel convinced that the crucifixion has not much to do with the world's attitude toward the Jew, that the reasons for it are older than the event. Jewish monopoly in Germany. In Berlin, a few years ago, I read a speech which frankly urged the expulsion of the Jews from Germany. And the agitator's reason was this. Are you paying attention? 85% of the successful lawyers in Berlin were Jews. 85%. And that about the same percentage of the great businesses of all sorts in Germany were in the hands of the Jews. 85%. The motive of persecution stands out as clear as day. In Vienna, an agitator said those details were true of Austria-Hungary. I am convinced that the persecution of the Jews is not in any large degree due to religious prejudice. No, the Jew is a money getter. He made it the end and aim of his life. He was at it in Rome. He has been at it ever since. His success has made the whole human race his enemy. You will say that the Jew is everywhere numerically feeble. When I read in the Encyclopedia Britannica that the Jewish population in the U.S. was 250,000, I wrote the editor and explained to him that I was personally acquainted with more Jews than that in my country, and that his figures were without doubt a misprint of 25 million people. People told me that they had reasons to suspect that for business reasons. Many Jews did not report themselves as Jews. There's a point right there, ladies and gentlemen. There's a point right there. They're still trying to tell you today that they're 2% of the population. And back then they were 4% of the population. And what did he just say? It looks plausible. Okay, people told me that they had reasons to suspect that for business reasons, that many Jews did not report themselves as Jews. There's another reason why they're more of the population than you suspect. It looks plausible. I am strongly of the opinion that we have an immense Jewish population in America. I am assured by men competent to speak that Jews are exceedingly active in politics. Will persecution of the Jew ever come to an end? On the score of religion, I think it has already come to an end. On the score of race, prejudice, and trade, I have the idea that it will continue. Race prejudice is no particular matter. Jewish persecution is not a religious passion. It is a business passion. Edmondson answers Miss Thompson's queries. I take pleasure in truthfully answering queries submitted to by Miss Dorothy Thompson. So far as lies within my power, in the following open letter of March 8, 1939. Dear Miss Thompson, although you have not seen fit in your letter of March 3rd to enable me to reply to my correspondence with original source information about yourself, I herewith gladly comply with your request, taking up the paragraphs of your communication Siriatim. Number one, for your enlightenment, an investment an investment economist and public relations counsel, both of which appear as titles in my letterhead, are directly concerned in root causes of American economic and political fields, which have been invaded and wrecked by the Jews. Over 2,900 of them listed in Who's Who in American Jewry as foreign-born, all evidently summoned me to this promised land by other Jews born here who have made it a milking pot instead of assimilating into the integral Americanism's social melting pot, so-called melting pot. Consequently, the Brandeis, Frankfurter, Morgenthau, Baruch Jewish school of thought is now dominating the political economic affairs of the nation with an alien and anti-American way of life that is destroying the republic by trying to substitute for it the rabbi-promulgated, thoroughly socialized democracy, described in Webster's dictionary as social democracy, the communism of Russia. Number two, it would be physically impossible in the first place to furnish you with a list of names of the patriots who finance my publications because they reach from the Atlantic to the Pacific coasts and from the Great Lakes to the Gulf of Mexico and are the great middle class of the Republic. Absolutely no Hitler Mussolini financing has been received. However, such would be as acceptable as were the German volunteers George Washington welcomed into the Liberation Army at the birth of the Republic. In the second place, to send you such names would be an act of a Judas betrayer, as you are apparently allied with those whom I regard the enemies of my country. You point out that Who's Who doesn't provide any data about me. This is correct, since my Jew exposure bulletins with my complete record, including a real likeness photo, are known among over 10 million Americans, so many more than Who's Who's circulation. I did not think it necessary to buy space in Who's Who. It pleases me very much to have confirmation in the first sentence of your letter as to the widespread publicity I am giving to the cause of patriotism. If you ask for it, I'll send you a copy of the letter from former President David Brown of the American Hebrew, wherein, after stating that he had exhaustively investigated my record, he was forced to give me a clean bill of health, professionally and otherwise, accepting my poisonous Jewish anti-Americanism documents. And he signed it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is remarkable stuff. I'm really, really pleased to be witnessing this with you and finding out just what has been going on even before I was born. That's kind of, important to me. I always wondered what happened before I was born, and now I'm really getting a load of it. How Key Jews Rule the USA, from Edmondson Bulletin, March 13, 1939. In this pamphlet is presented Key Jews, quote-unquote, resident in America, prominently appearing in the public press. Most of checking for accuracy has been in Who's Who of American Jewry, although certain important U.S. Jews have been omitted from that big book for some mysterious reason. While Francis Bloom, Russia's Finkelstein Litvinov, Britain's Hor Belicia, Mexico's Trotsky, and other foreign Jews have been listed in this American Jewish honor roll. Did you hear that? Mexico's Trotsky? Count of the Jews listed in the Jews Who's Who shows that it contains over 2,900 who were born abroad. The first point to keep in mind in this connection is that these foreign-born Jews have attained the status very quickly of keys, quote unquote, or they would have not been incorporated in this cream list. The second vital point to hold in mind is that Jews will not assimilate and become an integral part of Americanism, but remain notorious Jewish solidarity forever, which is essentially a nation within a nation. Yes, like a secret society within a secret society. This is the Jews' way of everything. That's how you know the Illuminati, when they were trying to play like, oh, it's not the Jews, it's the Illuminati. Yeah. No, it's the same patterns of the same enemy connecting the same dots. That's what it really is, ladies and gentlemen. That's what it really is. So the question arises, if Jewish religious practices are a menace to the peace and safety of the state, isn't the U.S. Supreme Court Mormon decision a religious precedent for Jewry's expulsion from America, just as it is the Asiatic Exclusion Act as a racial precedent? Like other members of their tribe, these foreign-born Jews promptly settle upon the glands of our American system as educator Jews. Doctor Jews, lawyer Jews, legislator Jews, political Jews, social worker Jews, public publicity Jews, economic Jews, financial Jews, movie Jews, radio Jews, and government Jews, parasitically eating out the substance we have created. In short, instead of regarding America as the melting pot of humanity, they make it the milking pot for international Jewry. Yes, it's what Jacob Schiff refers to as a sick man. See, he even refers to us as men. He knows we are nations. You see, after they sucked Turkey dry, he said we need another sick man. In other words, they know they're parasites, and they parasited Turkey and sucked everything dry from it, till there was nothing left to suck out of it, and then they needed another sick man, which was Russia. The great influx of foreign-born revolutionary Jews, upon analysis, is shown to be chiefly from Russia, Poland, Hungary, Romania, and Austria, called Eastern Jews, tribesmen from Asia, Mongol Jews. Many people believe that modern Freemasonry is a Christian secret society. It will enlighten them to know that more than 1,700 Jews listed in Who's Who in American Jewry are Masons. 245 32nd degree and 23 33rd degree, hello, which is regarded as representing the elect. President Franklin D. Roosevelt is a 32-degree Shriner Mason. Many rabbis are Masons. Are you listening? Many rabbis are Masons. Rabbi Isaac M. Wise wrote in The Israelite of America, quote-unquote, of August 3rd, 1866, Masonry is a Jewish institution whose histories, degrees, charges, passwords, and explanations are Jewish from beginning to end. And then you'll have this Mason who will hear this video and say, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, he doesn't know anything. I mean, Masonry is totally, totally honorable. Yes. I mean, it's very honorable to spit on the cross of Christ. And it's also honorable to accept demons within oneself as one goes up to the degrees. Yes, it's very honorable and very wise, too, because you're getting more light, more intellect. U.S. political key Jews, quote-unquote, President Franklin D. Roosevelt's key advisor Jews, Bernard M. Baruch, official, unofficial president, Prince of Jewry. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter, born Austria, legal mastermind, Karl Marx professor. U.S. Courts Justice L.D. Brandeis, retired, father of the New Deal, says Jews are a nationality. Henry Morgenthau, junior secretary of Treasury, Federal Reserve System boss. Herbert Feist, key for Secretary of State Hull, wife a Jewish known as Brains of State Department. Mordecai Ezekiel, key for Secretary of Agriculture, author of the illegal AAA. Nathan Marigold, key for Secretary Perkins of the Labor Department, aided by Leo Wolman. Cecilia Ravosky, C.E. Wysansky, David Dubinsky, Max Zeritsky, Rose Schneiderman, Thurman Arnold, and Harold Nathan, keys for Attorney General, aided by Benjamin V. Cohen, Roosevelt's legislation expert framer. William C. Bullitt, ambassador to France. Lawrence Steinhardt, Samuel Untermyer's nephew, ambassador to Peru. Harry F. Guggenheim, aeronautic counsel. E. A. Goldenweiser, born in Russia, Federal Reserve Bank System Research Director. William M. Leeserson, born of Estonia, born in Estonia, Chairman National Mediation Board. David J. Sapos, born Russia. See, you wouldn't even know that was a Jew name, right? Sapos. Suppose you don't know that. S-A-P-O-S-S, right? And Leeserson, you wouldn't know, right? Sidney Hillman, born Lithuania. Communist CIO backer. Communistic. Jerome N. Frank, Stock Exchange Commission Director. D.E. Lilienthal, Tennessee Valley Electric Power Authority Director. Abe Fortas, General Counsel PWA. Congressman Saul Bloom of New York, Democrat. Emmanuel Seller, that's C-E-L-L-E-R. Of New York, Democrat. Samuel Dickstein of New York, Democrat, born in Russia. Adolf Sabbath of Illinois, Democrat, born in Czechoslovakia. Mr. Edelstein of New York, Democrat. Leo Sachs of Pennsylvania, Democrat. State governors. Herbert H. Lehman of New York, international banker. Henry Horner of Illinois, Horner. You'd think that was a hick name or something, right? Payne Ratner of Kansas. New York Key Jews. Mayor F.H. LaGuardia. Postmaster Albert Goldman. Stanley M. Isaacs, President of Manhattan Borough. Samuel Fassler, Building Commissioner, born in Austria. Park Commissioner Robert H. Moses. Judges. Julian W. Mack. Mack, a Jewish name? Edgar H. Lauer. Alfred Frankenthaler. Louis Goldstein. Louis B. Brodsky, born in Russia. Louis A. Abrams. Bernard L. Scheintag. Isidore Wasservogel. Aaron Stewart. Edward B. Koch, J. Sidney Bernstein, Jacob Pankin, born in Russia, Nathan Perlman, born in Poland, Anna M. Cross, born in Russia, that's K-R-O-S-S, Samuel Rosenman, Samuel Mandelbaum, born in Poland, G.M. Moskowitz, Louis L. Cohen, Peter A. Abelis, born in Romania. Max Salomon. Justice Wise Pulitzer. Isidore L. Haber. Morris Eder. Irving Ben Cooper. See this? This is a Jewish name, Cooper. C-O-O-P-E-R. Hello! Morris Rothenberg, born in Estonia. Charles Solomon. Jacob Eel Perrin. Lester Lazarus. Abraham Goldman. Charles Marx. Joseph M. Proskauer. Erwin Untermeyer. Alfred Cohen. Edward Lazansky. Mark Rudich, born in Romania. American Labor Party. Executive Committee of 50 includes these names. Joseph Breisau, born in Russia. Meyer Bernstein. Joseph Brill. David Dubinsky, born in Poland. J.J. Bambrick. Abe Chapman. Meyer C. Finestone. Nathan Frankel. Harry Greenberg. Louis Hendon. Sidney Hillman, born in Lithuania. Julius Hockman. Louis Hollander, born in Poland. Abe Mendelwitz. Abraham Miller. Isidore Nagel. Remember the nigga named Nagel down there? Ray Nagel in the Chocolate City. Born in Poland. Samuel Perlmutter. Jacob S. Potofsky, born in Russia. Alex Rose. Rose, the last name. Another Jew name. Emil Schleisinger. Rose Schneiderman, born in Russia. Samuel Shore. Nathan. Why am I reading you these names? Because I want you to hear these names who are Jews. That's why. Is this a waste of your time? No. Because you're learning something that you don't even realize you're learning right now. Something very important. Charles Zimmerman, Max Zeritsky, Samuel Wochak, Meyer Weinstein, S.M. Blinken, Samuel Knoll, N-O-L-L, Mayor F.H. LaGuardia of New York City is enrolled as a member of the American Labor Party. The American Press, key Jews. Shlomo Ash, born in Poland. Rabbi Lewis Brown, with an E at the end, born in England. Konrad Berkovovich, let me say this again. Konrad Berkovici, born in Romania. John Kornos, born in Russia. Rabbi Solomon B. Freehoff, born in England. Waldo Frank, Montague Glass, Arthur Guiderman, with two N's, born in Austria. Henry H. Klein, born in Hungary. Ludwig Lewison, from Romania. Rabbi Lee G. Levinger. Maurice Samuel, born in Romania. Gio Seldes. Sidney Herschel, small. Rosika Schwimmer, born in Hungary. And Louis Untermeyer. Journalists. F.P. Adams. Ooh, Adams, a Jewish name. Alter Brody, born in Russia. Benjamin D. Kassirs. Edna Ferber. Rabbi Louis D. Gross. Now that brings me, Gross being a Jew name. Well, it just so happens in my state, there happens to be a Judge Gross running for judge. Now, would you vote for somebody with the name Gross? Neither would I. There's also another fella running for prosecutor, and his last name is Russo. Hello? Do you remember Aaron Russo? You see how Jews are all encroached in government? It doesn't matter where you go. There aren't any other signs of any other candidates. You go down a long, long highway and you'll see these same signs. You won't see anyone else's name. Do you know who's going to be elected? Let's keep going. Brody. Alter Brody, born in Russia. Benjamin D. Kassirs. Ferber. Okay, I went through a couple of those, right? Emil Ludwig Cohen, born in Germany. Walter Lippmann. David Lawrence. Ooh, Lawrence is a Jew name, can be a Jew name. Very interesting. Louis Lipsky, Eugene Lyons, Isaac F. Markeson. Yeah, like a watermark moccasin. Rabbi Samuel Margoshes, born in Galatia. Charles Michelson, Rabbi Louis Newman. M.J. Olgin, born in Russia. Bernard Postel, Joseph Pulitzer. Dorothy Parker, Louis Rittenberg, born in Hungary. M.S. Rukeyser, Maury Reichsend, Marcus Eli Ravage, born in Romania. G.O.E. Sokolsky, Philip Slomovitz, born in Russia. John I. Spivak, Herbert Bayard Swope, Walter Winchell, James Waterman, Wise, Frederick William Weil, Max Wrinkler, like Henry Wrinkler, you know he's a Jew anyway, right? Morris Fishbein, hello. There's one of the fellers from the book Murder by Injection, Morris Fishbein. One of the quacks that created the American Medical Association, who's just turned out to be the third largest killer in the nation. But that was just all happenstance. Sure, it has nothing to do with him being a Jew. And the other feller, too. Moses Annenberg of Philadelphia. David A. Brown, B-R-O-W-N, hello, of Detroit. Lowell Brentano of New York. Paul Block, J.H. Briben of New York. Abraham Kahan of New York. Lee Vand Brothers of Kansas. Adler Chain in Northwest. Eugene Meyer of Washington, D.C. Arthur G. Newman of New York. Liberty's Bernard McFadden of New York. David Stern of New York. Arthur Hayes Sulzberger of New York Times. David Shapiro of New York, born in Poland. The editorial departments of the newspapers are controlled chiefly through Jewish advertising influence. Many Jews are in the Associated Press and United Press Association, and the Hearst papers are Jew-directed. Radio. William S. Paley, President, Columbia Broadcasting System. David Sarnoff, President, Radio Corporation of America, dominating national broadcasting company. Many individual broadcasting stations are Jewish-owned, as shown by the directorates. You see what I'm saying to you, ladies and gentlemen? Are you digging what you're learning right now? Yes, it may not be that exciting to read some names to you, but I think that those names and just hearing those names will teach you a little about your Jewish radar. I call it Judar. Not Judah, but Judar, which is Jewish radar. Once you have your Jewish radar on, you can sniff them out. See, that's how I knew Mark Antonio was, and people like Nancy Pelosi and Mayor LaGuardia and Cuomo, and the fellow that was before, I don't remember his name, he was before Charles Schumer, was another Italian name, and many of the Italian names that have been in our government are all Sicilian connected, and it just tells me a little story, you see. Once you know where to look, how to look, you'd be surprised what you're going to be able to find. Mark Antonio, a liar? Edmondson Bulletin of March 25th, 1939. Congressman Vito Mark Antonio. Vito, he's a real Italian fella, isn't he? I bet he goes to the Catholic Church. Made the following speech on the floor of the House February 3rd, 1939. Did you know that... On this week's news, did you know that Cuomo came out, Governor Cuomo, the Sicilian-Italian, and he said he's going to sue the Supreme Court if they reversed the decision of Roe versus Wade, and I had a lot to discuss about that. Why would an Italian be interested in stopping? Why would he be interested in stopping child ritual murder sacrifice? Why wouldn't he be interested in that? Why would he be interested in making sure that it continues? Well, the answer is very clear. Tune into my news from August 8th, the EFR News Midweek Edition, and you'll hear my commentary on it. See, I wouldn't have known any better before. And this also affects how much the population of Jews is, too, you see. All these little factors. Congressman Vito Marcantonio made the following speech on the floor of the House February 3rd, 1939, against extension of the Dies Committee investigation of communism, and lost. Why would Mr. Marcantonio, an Italian-American, who's one of those wonderful Italians, not the real Italians, he's the fake Italian, he's the one that's a race-mixed Italian, the real Italians of North Italy don't believe these people are Italian at all. But he's pretending, and he's got you believing he's an Italian. When in reality, he's got Negro blood, he's got Jew blood, and Arab blood flowing through his veins. And as well, he must have a little bit of white there somewhere. He's just a real melting pot in himself. But he just happens to be interested in Jews and communism heavily. The two most vicious anti-Jews in America are Robert Edward Edmondson and James True. Edmondson will be remembered as the man who was arrested under charges of criminal libel brought by Mayor LaGuardia and other leading citizens of New York. He is best known as the most prolific writer of anti-Jewish literature, according to the University of Chicago study by D.S. Strong, published last year. And in recognition of this fact, has been invited several times to speak before the Nazi Bund in New York City. Again, in the case of Edmondson, anti-Jewishism and anti-New Dealism are brought together in the person of Howland Spencer, Edmondson's chief backer. In order to set the record straight, I wrote March 11th as follows to Mark Cantonio. We're kind of out of time, folks. I'm on page 157, and that about wraps it up today, but I'm telling you, it's been sweet. You've been listening to the One-to-One Radio Show here on the Eurofolk Radio Network, here at eurofolkradio.com. Love you. We'll see you in part 9.